leadership and executive influence, your vagus nerve is the biggest influencer of your body. And when you're looking to amplify your influence, you are going, the better your vagus nerve functions, the more you are the thermostat in the room and not the thermometer.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast. Today we are delighted to be talking to Melanie Weller, a medical visionary and expert on the vagus nerve. And I'd never heard about the vagus nerve until I'd been speaking to Melanie, and it is so interesting as to how it's at the center of everything that we do. So it's very, very relevant in terms of leadership. So welcome to the show, Melanie.
Thank you so much, John and Rachel. I'm excited to be here. Well, I've been a physical therapist for 25 years, and I was an athletic trainer before that. So I've, for the better part of 30 years, I'm well practiced at helping people with their physical situations. And over the years, I ended up really specializing in people that had not figured, been able to, that no one else had figured out over time, and they hadn't figured themselves out. They were struggling with an ongoing problem, and or were even if it wasn't so much of a struggle, they had just accepted, like, well, I have a bad back, I have a bad knee, and every few years I end up in physical therapy or whatever, and this is just my life. You know, I can't do the things that I used to love and whatnot. And I was introduced very early in my career to the idea of decompressing the vagus nerve at the base of the skull. And it was always such a magical technique that when people had knee problems that weren't getting better, or ankle problems that weren't getting better, even I would treat the base of their skull, and it was like everything just melted away and suddenly they could move normally. And wow. Over the years, I really developed and built out this process and really just came to understand how quite literally our heads and our toes are connected via the vagus nerve, you know, and that you can, and I love that whole magic show aspect of treating patients. And you know, when you work with more complicated clients or people that have had more longstanding situations, they, you know, and I say this with the greatest amount of love, that they have, they're biomechanical train wrecks, that they're, you know, that there's stuff going on head to toe. And, you know, and as a clinician, you can kind of make yourself crazy chasing all of the positive tests that you can get. Yeah. In some of these cases. But the game I always played with myself, or the challenge I always gave myself, was what one, two, or three things can I do that make 10, 20, or 30 things better? Like, how can I just wipe all of this out? And so just over the years, and I just did that because I thought it was fun. I wasn't, and so over the years, I've just gotten much better at it. And I know how to unlock that one piece. And so as people with, you know, like unlocking that physical piece became easier for me with a lot of people. What I really started to notice was how what was happening inside of their bodies was very metaphoric for what was happening outside of their bodies. You know, that, you know, the foot pain patients that were like digging their heels in, not wanting to move forward, and the neck pain patients that were literally carrying the weight of the world on yeah. their shoulders, you know, beyond their responsibility. And so it's very clear to me that there was this connection that was between their personal lives and their businesses that was playing out in their body, that their story was, you know, their bodies were highlighting something that was happening on a bigger scale. And so
would they not have really have known that they won't have been aware of this connection then?
No, because we keep everything very because we keep things very separate. Like, we don't yeah. have a language that connects our personal lives to our bodies, to our medical situations, to, you know, and that's really at the end of the day what the vagus nerve offers, and what I'm bringing forward in the bigger picture is this cohesive language, and what I call a cohesive cosmology, that ties everything together, so you can really always see how everything's connected.
So where does the vagus nerve start, and mm-hmm. where does it end? How would people actually locate it? Is it that sort of feeling that if you rub the back of your neck when you've got a lot of tension, that you get like you know, goosebumps? Is it that sort of feeling? Is that
it can be? It's certainly involved in that. Your vagus nerve is the biggest part of your parasympathetic nervous system. It goes all the way from the brainstem down to the pelvis. And so if your question is the vagus nerve involved? The answer is almost always yes, because it's everywhere. It connects
everything
basically. Yeah. It is the piece that it is not in of your body is your adrenal glands, and it's your parasympathetic responses balance out your fight and flight responses. Okay. So we all know when our vagus nerve is not working so well. For example, when we go to do public speaking and we get a lump in our throats and our palms start to sweat and our hearts race and our stomachs feel funny, because those are all vagus nerve mediated functions. And in that stress response of going to do public speaking, our vagus nerve gets dialed down and our fight and flight responses get dialed up. And that's why we get the lump in our throat and the sweaty palms. And
so that part of, am I right in thinking that works in the limbic part of your brain, the flight and fight response?
Well, it's tied. It is. It's a very old part of our brain. And we certainly are. You know, when we have stress and trauma, there's always a story that goes with it. And your vagus nerve is really also the bridge between your story and your body. And so, well, first I want to recap a little bit more about what the vagus nerve does. So after it exits the base of your skull, and I'm going to talk in big, broad strokes here because your vagus nerve does a lot of things. So I'm not going to highlight everything that it does, but I'll hit the highlights here. From a motor standpoint, it exits the base of your skull, it goes down towards your heart, and then loops back up to innervate your vocal cords. So I like to think of it as the nerve that allows us to speak our hearts.
Okay.
That's nice.
It innervates our hearts and then goes down to innervate our digestive systems. We cannot absorb vitamin B12 without our vagus nerve. It's involved in bile and digestive enzyme secretion, and it innervates the muscles that move food through our digestive systems. In women, it innervates the cervix, and sexual arousal in general is a parasympathetic response. And so your vagus nerve is also really important for being able to experience pleasure. It mediates inflammation. So for example, in how well the vagus nerve functions in patients that are diagnosed with pancreatic cancer has predictive value for how long they will live because of how much inflammation it keeps in check. The vagus nerve does much more sending information up to your brain than it does down to your body. So it's very much your gut brain and your heart brain. It's those more intuitive feelings, you know, those pathways that we get. Like when you walk into a room and it feels great or it feels terrible, you know, the way we kind of all perceive energy is very much a vagal driven thing. And it's certainly, there's some research that shows that how well your vagus nerve function gives you better like clarity in your mind's eye. And when your vagus nerve is in all of your senses also. And when you pair in the research, when they've paired vagus nerve stimulation with an auditory stimulus, it literally remaps your brain at the highest levels. So when we look at creating new patterns and creating new habits and having breakthroughs, your vagus nerve is really integral to changing the neural map in your brain that allows that to happen. And in a leadership context, it's very much your grace under pressure. And so that ability to kind of stay in the zone and stay in a place of flow and be attentive to what's going on and be actively problem solving, that your vagus nerve is really, really mediates and helps you stay in that space of grace under pressure, which is certainly important for leaders.
And how does that vary then? So we're saying that it doesn't perform too well against the fight or flight response, or is it in? I'm a little bit confused.
Well, I will say that we're well practiced at our fight and flight responses. Like we're not as well practiced at being calm and feeling good. Yeah. I think it is absolutely capable. It's not that it can't override it so much or that it can't soothe that down. But we perceive, so in the way that we, you know, we all have our stories that vary, you know, our fight and flight responses are fundamentally for life and death situations or, you know, where we're really feeling threatened. And, but sometimes we can learn that, like when somebody uses a particular tone of voice, you know, if somebody speaks in the same tone of voice that perhaps like that reminds you of like your mother or your father when they were, you know, when that was a challenging relationship, then that's going to send you into a fight and flight response, even though it's not about,
it's not that
the person in that, in the moment.
Sure.
You know, but it digs up an old pattern where you felt threatened. And we embody stress and trauma on the horizontal plane in our bodies. So for example, nobody gets stressed or traumatized and has really great arm swing when they walk. We all freeze up. We, you know, hold our arms close to our sides. You know, nobody's sashaying down the hall after trauma. And the and those horizontal structures, which include our vocal cords that are innervated by the vagus nerve and our respiratory diaphragms and our pelvic floors, those horizontal structures can pinch the vertical structures that go through it. And so then you lose internal flow and then you start stumbling externally as well. And you don't get all of the good input to your brain that can give you the option to have better output.
Yeah, Melanie, this all sounds, it sounds, it's totally new stuff to me. So thank you for sharing this. But it also, when you're explaining it like that, it makes sense because we all know when we're stressed and when we don't feel well, we don't perform as well. I think what will be new for a lot of people is they don't know why. And they don't know that this is all related to the vagus nerve. Perhaps you could tell us a few more stories about how you got so interested in this area to kind of demonstrate what exactly is going on.
Sure.
With the nerve. And I'm kind of really keen to just glean loads of stuff from you that I should be doing in relation to this.
Yeah, oh, of course. So I'll give you two examples. One man that I've worked with over the last several years, he literally came to me with a vocal dysfunction where his voice was not as clear as it had been. One of the places that your vagus nerve can get compressed is at the top of the shoulders, kind of behind the collarbones and as it comes from the neck into the chest. And the stress behind that is really when your emotions and your adaptability are at odds with each other. So when you're being too flexible, like being someone else's doormat, which is a situation that that I see a lot in my clients, and is certainly part of my own history too. I think we all do the thing, you know, we help people solve the things that we need to solve for ourselves. And, but where his adaptability and his emotions were at odds with each other, and it was impairing his identity and really showing up fully in his business. He has a marketing business and he's really trying, you know, was trying to do it in the way that he thought the external world thought he was supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. Versus really speaking from his own voice and his own power and saying, you know, I'm going to be a disruptor in this space. And so we did some physical work with his vagus nerve, but we also talked about where, like the voice of his business and where his voice was impaired and where that came from in his history. And so, and as that all gelled together, then it gave his business voice became clearer. He got more clients, and better than that, he got more ideal clients because he was putting himself out there more authentically and he wasn't attracting the people that were, you know, not quite the right fit for what he was looking for. He was able to leave his full-time job and support himself outside of that. And where there was, you know, there was absolutely physical aspects of, you know, where I helped him, we worked online together. And so I helped him open up that space for his vagus nerve so that he had better flow. When you treat the physical body, sometimes someone's story will change, but when you treat their story, their physical body will always change. And so when you, so really looking into what that, that story is of where his voice got suppressed and looking at it particularly in archetypal terms. So like for the voice, I will often use imagery of a bull, because the way our hyoid bones in our throats sit on top of our larynxes looks very much like the astrological symbol for Taurus. And in astrology, Taurus rules the throat. And there's an ancient Egyptian myth of the Apis Osiris bull that describes laryngeal anatomy in a lot of detail. And you can work people, you can guide people through this problem solving through the imagery without re-traumatizing them over what happened. And so it opens up this, you know, it opens up a bigger space for problem solving. And so he was able, you know, as he got his physical voice in line, he was also able to then find his business voice and realize and create better boundaries. Like, well, the research actually shows that your vagus nerve helps you, can help you set better boundaries or have better boundaries between your emotions and somebody else's emotions. So you're not always taking on more than what's yours. I have another client who was, her mom had been a prescription drug addict and had passed away by the time I worked with her. And so we had talked about that. And then we ended up, and she had this job that was amazing on paper. It was everything she had ever wanted. And she was miserable in it and couldn't quite figure out why she was so miserable in it. And so she starts describing her employer to me, and she uses the same language to describe her employer that she uses to describe her mother. And so she went and recreated her relationship with her mother with this employer, who was just very creative about, you know, she didn't pick another person to repattern that relationship. She put it into this bigger employer institution. And so it was pulling out all of the same stress responses that she had in dealing with her mother. And as she came to understand that, then she was, first of all, able to just to regulate her nervous system more effectively in that situation, because she at least realized what was playing out. And ultimately, she did leave that job and found something that was a much, much better fit that was not repeating that pattern. And that pattern repetition, I think, is something that we, you know, that's not all bad. But, you know, but that, like, developing that awareness around it. Now what I do with business owners, I have this big long list of about 60 questions that I take them through to see how their bodies and their businesses are related. And it was very clear that to me that her business was having this type 1 diabetes situation in it, archetypally, where she wasn't getting, you know, her ability to absorb the sugar and the nutrients was playing out. And her ego had been very severely damaged when she was younger, and she's wired for leadership. And her son has type 1 diabetes also. And so there was this bigger, and she just hadn't connect, you know, she's really trying to heal her son, you know, and to help heal this, I think, diabetes in a bigger picture. If you asked her what kind of fund she would start to help people, she would absolutely, you know, fund something related to diabetes research. And, but that same dysfunction is playing out in her business. And so really then identifying archetypally kind of, well, what's your, you know, what is that insulin? Like, where, you know, where is your insulin for your business? And how can we get, can we unlock that so that it's, you know, so that you can absorb the sugar? And it was incredibly, I know that sounds very kind of abstract here, but that whole discussion, like that realization for her in her life, just connected all sorts of dots. And she was able to really put pieces together and see how she knew she wasn't showing up 100%, but she hadn't quite been able to articulate it. And so I use a combination, you know, certainly all these archetypal questions, and I'll look at people's astrology charts and think about, as the vagus nerve bridges our stories in our bodies, like I believe it's also the bridge for just how the cosmos is coded into us. And there's some research that supports this, and the way that the alterations in the electromagnetic field of the earth are measurable in our vagus nerves, which makes the electromagnetic fields of our hearts. And so there's this, you know, and these kind of eternal stories and mythology, among many things, was a mode of communicating scientific information. And so story is very powerful in in getting into it. And that's where really the limbic system comes in, because the difference between acute, subacute pain and chronic pain, and I would extend this to chronic limiting beliefs, is that chronic pain gets locked into our limbic system, which is where our emotions are. And you can't logic yourself out of your limbic system. You need an emotional key to get it out of there. And so where I can technical talk around the vagus nerve all day long, when somebody's vagus nerve is compressed at the base of their skull, I will ask them where their heroics and their desires are at odds with each other, where they're being the hero in someone else's story at the expense of their own, or where they're satisfying everybody else's desires at the expense of their own, or what their crazy wild dream is for themselves if they could do anything in their lives. And there's, you know, that's fundamentally, well, in astrology terms, it's where your Aries and your Taurus intersect. So it's where your heroics and your desires intersect with each other. And that ends up being a much more, it's always a much more poignant question. And when your heroics and your, and so it, I'll say one, it's a more poignant question. And so it elicits, it starts to tap into that emotional key to what's going on. And when your heroics and your desires are at odds with each other, it impairs your vision and your other senses. And, you know, clear vision is a really fundamental component of good leadership. And, but we often are very culturally conditioned, and I'll just say women often more than men, to be the hero in our partner stories and the hero in our children's stories. And we're always putting our vision for ourselves on the back burner. And so learning that really you, as you nourish yourself more fully, you actually nourish everyone else better as well, and finding the bigger balance of that. But that will, you know, in like through my physical therapy career, what I saw over and over is that when, you know, when people had this situation, their heroics versus their desires, they'd show up with neck pain and headaches. You know, it would show up very physically, and then it would show, but then it would also show up metaphorically in the way, you know, in the limiting vision of their business and, you know, and in the way their personal struggles were playing out. And so, you know, when I work with people, it really starts, you know, I help them, you know, connect those dots. And as you do that and you step into this bigger story, you regulate your nervous system much more effectively.
Melanie, I think this is making a lot of sense to me. And I'm very interested in psychotherapy and transaction analysis. We talk about the drama triangle a lot. And I think what I'm hearing you explained before was that role of the rescuer that a lot of people jump into, where they're putting other people's needs before their own, and then they get frustrated that they're not recognized for helping others and putting other people's, you know, kind of will and welfare before their own. We get a lot of people present for coaching that are in that role and they're feeling unsatisfied. But what I'm hearing is that affects your body as well through the vagus nerve. And that's why we see this kind of low energy. People kind of look deflated when they're in that role and they're carrying this weight. And this is making a lot of sense to me in terms of, I'm qualified in CBT as well. And so I'm always asking people around their physiology. So what does your body do when you're feeling this? And our bodies can tell us so much about how we, what our stress triggers are. I guess what I hadn't put together is that, is it chicken or egg? It's like, is this the vagus nerve or is this the life condition? But I guess what you're saying is we're conditioned for a lot of these feelings in our upbringing, like where our triggers are and our emotional responses. And then we maybe recreate the patterns of those because those feelings are comfortable, even though they're maybe not good for us. And if
absolutely,
you can identify those, you can get on the path to make your life better.
Absolutely. We are fundamentally wired for what's familiar, not what's right. The big point I want to make is how prescriptively we store stress in our bodies. You know, that we can really use the area of the body where we experience it to help uncover the, like, those more stress-related and spiritual underpinnings that are driving that and those past life experiences. So, for example, things that show up at the feet, I would say, or even the pelvic floor, like root chakra, are where your transformation and your rootedness are at odds with each other. And like a little bit higher, like at the knees and then at the hips level, that's more where your inspiration and your structure are at odds with each other. And so like I have these kind of big ways of talking about it, and, you know, and then they will whittle it down, you know, and get more and more specific. But it's endlessly fascinating to me how I can use these kind of broad stroke terms and ask people what's going on. And they're like, oh my gosh, how did you know? You're reading me really well, or that there's all of these things, you know, that, and their body, you know, and so I can read the energy of the body, but it really tells this whole story. And if you're stuck in the drama triangle being, you know, as you described earlier, you know, with that heroics, you know, being the hero, the rescuer, but if it's happening because your transformation and your rootedness are at odds with each other, then that's the piece that really needs to be addressed. And I get, you know, and that's certainly part of the art of what I do, is really discerning kind of, because you can have lots of things driving something, but where is really the one thing that's, you know, where is that key that's going to really start to unlock? And we're all very, very clever about how we lay down this tension. And we often, I'll say, we, you know, like the feet to me are so interesting, because we really ground ourselves with our dysfunction. You know, I recently, you know, I still see people here. I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I had a Parkinson's patient recently, and energetically, I felt like Parkinson's patients don't make enough dopamine. So I felt like she was, or her body told me the story, she was energetically grounding herself with her dopamine. And I helped her release her dopamine from her ankles, and she left my office looking like she had taken too much medication, because like it was crazy. And so I think we can really, you know, but having this fundamental language that you talk about with our bodies, like how does your body respond to things? And I think, you know, a lot of people don't even really know. We're so stuck in our heads and not in our bodies that, and giving the vagus nerve more physical space to move is a very effective way to drop you really into your body, where you can perceive that more effectively, and to not be so stuck on the hamster wheel in your head, which is just, you know, has become our global culture. And, you know, Descartes is really who is known for separating like the mundane world from the spiritual world. At the end of the day, what I really do is help people just connect with how much bigger they are than their physical beings, and to have, you know, and to hold a bigger vision of what's possible. You know, I just have a more, you know, very body-based, mechanical, systematic way of kind of targeting that.
These connections are just fascinating, Melanie. And I guess that they are truly fascinating if you turn up as one of your clients or, you know, patients. What's the ratio of sort of physical work that you do with a patient to... Mm-hmm. The stuff that you're talking about, because I think the stuff that you're talking about is really, really important for the patient to make those connections, and yeah, that helps so many other things. And they must be thinking, oh, they must get a lot of, you must see a lot of light bulb, oh wow, kind of moments. But how much time do you spend on each?
I probably would. Well, my knee jerk reaction to answer that is about half and half. But I will say that what very often happens, like I used to start with the physical piece and then go address the stress related underpinnings of all of it. And, you know, and I have created a form of energy medicine around this. And so it's also, you know, I'll separate that, you know, that I have, like, say, the physical, the energetic piece, and then the thought, you know, exercise imagery piece of it. And I used to go in through, you know, starting with the body piece, and then we'll see what's left after that, and talk about the stress later. And part, you know, and that was certainly that part of that's just my comfort zone from years of treating people for physical situations. But now I will say I start with those more, what I call those leadership compression points, or those spiritual and stress related underpinnings of the physical piece. And I will start with I'll start with a self-assessment, so they at least know how their body, you know, like we'll check in and see where their range of motion and joints are, you know, might be limited, just to see how it's expressing. But we'll go in kind of through those more archetypal compression points, and 99% of the time at the end of it, the physical technique is not needed because it has shifted. And so it took me a while to, you know, just in my own, to believe that it really worked that way all the time, you know, because it's, you know, because I've been so, you know, so deep in people's physical bodies for such, you know, for such a long time. But yeah, when you go in, you know, and you start uncovering those other things, then at the end of the session, there, you know, there's often very little need to do, or your, or the physical stuff that needs to be done is a little bit more fine tuning and not unlocking something that's been really hard locked. And that's really the fascinating process to me.
So you mentioned earlier on, Melanie, that you've done some work online with people. What you've just described there would sort of lend itself towards being able to do that, even though you can't actually do a physical intervention, if you like.
Well, yes. And I would argue that you, I mean, in energy medicine terms, you can do more. You can do, while it might not seem like a physical intervention, you certainly can do interventions that influence the physical aspect. I've resolved people's back pain from over the interwebs. I have a unique set of skills in that respect. But I think that what's really fun is to help people figure it out themselves and to see them become their own geniuses versus this idea that you need a healer or somebody to come in to transform it. And I think I have a very complicated relationship with the word healing because I think it's such a codependent kind of word that's, you know, and I think, and it implies that we're inherently broken at some level. And I don't think that's true. I think what we need to do is remember who we are, and that's really the magic in treating the body as a fractal of the cosmos, both through angular relationships and the vagus nerve, as well as the stories that go with the cosmos. Like you literally start to remember yourself at the at your deepest levels. And I'm writing my book right now, and I'm contextualizing a lot of it through the Egyptian myth of Isis and Osiris, because I have literally lived this story in a number of different ways. And I'll give you the abridged version. But Osiris was the king of Egypt, and his brother Set was jealous and angry and wanted to be king. And so Set tricked Osiris into laying down in a bejeweled coffin, had his soldiers nail the lid shut and carry him to the Nile River, sending him downstream to his death. Osiris's wife Isis found out about this, and she went and found his body and took him back to a cave and breathed new life back into him. Set found out about this and was furious, and so he found Osiris and chopped his body into pieces and scattered the pieces down the Nile River. And Isis again found all of the pieces, took him back to the cave, put him back together, brought him back to life long enough to conceive their divine child, Horus. And then Osiris went on to be king of the underworld, which for the Egyptians was where all life came from and all treasures were found. And while if you're in that story, if I imagine myself in that story, that everybody outside of Set's inner circle that was trying to sabotage things probably thought Osiris's destiny was to be the king of Egypt, but his true destiny was to be the king of the underworld. And he literally had to come apart to come back together in a new way. And we use dismemberment metaphors in our language all the time. We say we're falling apart, we can't get it together, our hearts are broken, our lives are shattered. And so I think this, like where he was like quite literally dismembered, mm-hmm. you know, I think that this like remembering of who we are is the thing that we universally seek. And I think going through it in a more, you know, in a way that like with a language that unites all the pieces. So you can see how your work life and your personal life and your health and your psyche and all those things have been playing together and that they're using the same language and we have not been taught how to interpret it in that way.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating, Melanie. You've really got me thinking when you were talking about the feet and the knees and the hips and the neck. And I'm just kind of thinking about a lot of what our listeners might be asking themselves now. So if you're up for it, do you want to have a little go on me now?
Sure. Yeah.
And what I'm thinking, and the reason being, is this notion that your body and your business are connected is really quite interesting to me. And obviously being a coach and doing what we do, I am very aware of my stresses. And I will say to you sometimes, won't I, John, I'll say like, I'm getting a pain in my arm now. I have to like, and that's like a trigger for me that I'm probably working too much.
It's also a trigger for me to take a little bit more work off you, isn't it?
That is a trigger for you, John. But, you know, I've been coaching now for about 6 years, so I am more aware of it, but I'm not aware of how things are connected. So, well, shall I give the thing that triggered me when you said that is I've got another business as well, and it was meant to start properly in January, and then it fell over, and then it's been very difficult with COVID, shall we say, anyway. And then we're starting again this week. And I have had a lot of problems with my knee in the last month. And literally, I found a new office today and I went for a run. And it's the first day in months that my running has been perfect. And isn't it funny that I've got order now and my knee isn't niggling? And then the other place I get, I'll just tell you the context, is I constantly have a lot of pain in my shoulders and neck. And I always think it's because I'm typing a lot. But I've experimented a lot with how I sit and where I sit. And I do wonder if it's maybe something about the weight of the world and pressures and responsibilities. My mum died when I was when I was 17. So I do feel a lot of emotional weight and responsibility for other people.
Going back to your knee situation, knees are structure and money. They're in astrology, they're ruled by Capricorn and Saturn. And so the fact that you got a new office makes a lot of sense as to why your knees would start. You would have a shift in your knee pain.
That is interesting because money has been a big concern as well, actually for most of this year. And that is the first time in years I've had knee issues.
And knees are also, I will say, or let's say the backside of the knee especially, is a freeze point. So I've talked mostly about where the vagus nerve gets compressed, but I have not talked about where, like, those compression points are not, like, they cause a stress, but there's a whole nother part of the vagus nerve that will send us into a freeze response where things get really severely locked down. And so I think even, like, just the prevalence of people needing knee replacement issues is a result of where they're stuck in a freeze response that hasn't been addressed. For your shoulder issue, or the fact that it shows up in your right arm and your neck. Well, what I would first do, first let me just see you turn your head side to side and see how far you can go. Okay. And if you turn your head all the way to one side and then bring your ear towards your chest, lead with your front ear.
Like this?
Nope, lead with your left ear. So turn your head all the way to the right and now bring your left ear towards your chest.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I can feel that.
Does that, okay, now go the other side. Does that?
I'm turning my head to the left and then I have to put my right shoulder down.
Yeah. So can you feel that that's kind of tight on both?
I can feel that's tight across my back
and
down my left side of my neck.
Okay. So functionally that tells me you have elevated first ribs on your right and left side, and your first ribs are right up here at the top of your shoulders.
I never knew.
And so, but it's a good marker it's a good before and after marker.
Okay.
To see, you know, so I just want to, you know, I like to give people a little bit of a, you know, some reference point for the change so that you know something has changed. And, but I think what, you know, and so my temptation, like from a logical standpoint, my temptation would be to really go to talk more about that heroics, you know, that rescuer sort of pattern. But because you're getting the pain in your arm, expressing that way too, what I'd like to know is where you're giving and not receiving, or where you're where are you hemorrhaging out giving? Where is your energy distribution focused, where you're giving and giving and giving to a particular situation, whether that's through the new business venture or
That is interesting. So it could be the new business venture. It could also be a lot of our coaching work actually has been on hold during COVID. So it feels like we're still giving out, doing the podcasts and still doing a lot of research, but a lot of our big projects are on hold. So there's not much, and we know it will come back. It's just difficult being in a holding pattern. And then is there anything in my other life that I do feel like I'm giving in coming back? I mean, my brother has a lot of, there's massive drug addiction problems, and I have am very careful not to jump into rescuer with him. I have to do a lot of self-preservation around that. But when I do have meltdowns, I kind of have to think, like, when has he ever done anything nice for me? And he takes so much of my time. I put very, very strict boundaries around it. But even if it's 2 hours a week, I'm like, he never does anything for me. And you talked before about the hero role and when am I a hero? And actually, I never wanted to be one, because I don't think when your parents, if one of your parents dies when you're 17, you don't want to be a parent at 17. You don't want that role. So it isn't that role for me. I think I'm like, I don't want to be looking after you.
Absolutely. Right. Right.
Maybe that's it. I am very aware of the boundaries with him, but occasionally it gets too much. And I'm just the mental capacity. I actually don't do that much physically because I have to protect myself, but I have to just be like, this has to stop now.
You know, and sometimes in creating boundaries with other people, we sometimes end up blocking our own receiving pathways.
Yes.
You know, that we make the boundary too broad.
Yes. I do feel sometimes a little bit sad that maybe I'm missing out. You know, I miss that, like, having a brother, do you know what I mean? And I also put boundaries with other people, so I don't always tell my dad or my sisters or my husband what's going on with him, because I actually just don't want to give it any more space or energy. But then maybe I block the other pathways.
So what's one thing that you could do to practice receiving, or to practice you know, even if it's just giving to yourself, like, where could you give?
That is a good question. Do you know, I'm actually not bad at this. I am quite good at the self-care, you know, running, relaxing, doing things for me. I guess I have confused perhaps self-care though at the minute. And I think this is maybe where the lines are getting blurred with the business. So then the self-care becomes investing in the business, but then that takes away my energy as well. So maybe I'm falling into that trap.
Well, and so a question I often ask people is, where is filling your cup draining you? Because we often have so many tips and tricks, especially those of us that are coaches and clinicians, that the, you know, then the management of exhaust, you know, managing who we are becomes this a very exhausting kind of thing. So let me ask you this. If you were going to dress your soul, what does she wear?
Like, as in clothes-wise?
Yeah.
I do love being in my running gear and my, you know, I feel very strong when I'm in like Lululemon and my running gear, but I also am sporting a very lovely new Burberry belt at the minute that makes me feel really nice. I feel really good in my yoga stuff, actually. I always feel like that's a really good symbol for starting the day well. So yeah, it would probably be that.
Perfect. So spend a minute kind of getting your inner yoga clad, you know, running gear person lined up with your physical body, that you just close your eyes for a moment and just imagine that her eyes are lined up with your eyes and her heart's lined up with your heart and her breath is lined up with your breath.
It does feel better.
And her feet are lined up with your feet, you know, and so this then gives you a way to move through your day and through, you know, so you can take this then and go for, you can walk like her and you can unload the dishwasher like her and you can speak from that space. And that, you know, often when we're caught up so much in the doing of things, we've lost the being part of it, you know, that it's really more about how you're being versus what you're doing. So now let's have you turn your head and bring your ear towards
easier on the, what's that side? My right side.
On your right side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got a little, and
I've got
so
a little bit more flexibility there.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And so that's a very, you know, like my, and so the other place that I would tap into, and this ties into, I know one of the things that you asked me in advance here, but one of my favorite sayings is from a tribe in the Andes Mountains. And they say that your future is behind you, propelling you forward, and your past is in front of you, waiting for you to make peace with it and clear your way.
What a lovely quote.
And we all have the experience of tripping over our pasts, That's something that we, you know, that I think most of us can identify with at some level. Mm. But this idea that your future has your back and it's not something that you have to go chasing out in front of you, I think is, or I find it's very soothing to the nervous system and just, you know, allows you to then operate in a, you know, move through life a little bit differently. And the backside of the heart, I believe, is where that energy comes in and kind of where your future has your back. And that's also one spot that the vagus nerve gets compressed. And so what I'll have people do is to cross their left ankle in front of their right, and then take their right hand and put it on the outside of the left thigh, and then take the left hand and put it behind their heads.
We're all doing this now, so hopefully.
Yes, yeah. And if you're listening, please, like, don't do this while you're driving or doing any multitask. Like, give this your full attention if you're doing it right now. And then I want you to inhale into the backside of your heart. So you're going to expand your rib cage on the backside, like maybe a little bit more towards the left shoulder blade, and then hold your breath for a couple of seconds there. And then exhale as long as you can. Make it a really long, long exhale breath, like you're blowing out a candle or blowing up a balloon. And so I'll have you guys do that two more times. But then as you breathe into the backside of your heart, imagine that you're breathing into your future, that it's lining up with you, that that's like the magnet where you pull it, where you're going to pull that magic from behind you into truth in front of you.
You just want to repeat the sitting position for our listeners. Well, John,
sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the sitting position is to cross your left ankle in front of your right. And if you can give a little bit of pressure between your ankles to there, that's nice to do. The beautiful thing, if you have any limitations or pain or situations where you can't get in this position or any piece of this, the beautiful thing about your brain is it does not imagine doing it, and imagining it is any different. The same parts of your brain will activate. So you can literally just imagine doing this exercise and it will work for you as well. So with ankles crossed, right hand on the outside of the left thigh, left hand on the back of the head, and then inhale into the backside of the heart and hold, and then a really long exhale. And that starts to open up the backside of the rib cage. And mechanically, you know, from when we are stressed, we do not breathe in the backside of our rib cage. Yeah.
That's remarkable. I instantly feel more positive. I don't think there's any other word to say. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that last statement that you made there, that you don't, when we're stressed, we don't breathe into the back of the heart. Where is that breath, Melanie? Where is the best breath, if you like?
Where we do, we put it, we end up over-breathing with our necks.
Yeah.
Like we put it into our upper chest, or we will flare our ribs, our lower ribs in the front as well. When you don't have that breath
together,
on the...
That movement.
They can, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but those are the two... the two places. You'll see excess upper neck breathing. And certainly for people that have chronic neck issues with sitting, I can guarantee you, Rachel, you've probably been over breathing with your accessory neck muscles in a way that that has perpetuated that tightness. And I could, you know, again, I could be very technical if I wanted to in terms of like how to get out of that. But when I tell people just to, you know, let the future have their back, they automatically, like, that taps into that limbic piece and you start to move differently. And, you know, when you get to, when you see your inner being and start to move like him or her and, you know, really embody your more archetypal self, then those, the resistance to habit change, I find, is just way, way less.
Yeah, that is interesting, because I am somebody that I didn't really ever suffer from anxiety, but the last, you know, 2020 with COVID, and I got made redundant, money worries were very difficult. Starting a new business, still keeping an old business going. It was just a lot of change, like a lot of people. And I did start to feel a lot more anxious and a lot more anxiety. And I literally carry it in my neck and my shoulders. So that makes a lot of sense. So I'm kind of stopping my vagus nerve from working to its full potential by carrying this anxiety.
Absolutely. Well, breathing with your upper chest, like in that pattern, is going to stimulate your fight and flight responses. So it's keeping you living in a fight and flight response, and it's keeping your vagus nerve dialed down as a movement pattern. And I'll just
It's so interesting though, isn't it? Because we get very comfortable in fight or flight if it's an emotion we are comfortable with. And my fight and flight was triggered a lot when I was young. So that would make sense. So when things are uncertain for me, my fight and flight feels a very comfortable place to be, albeit not pleasant.
Absolutely. And our pain and pleasure are processed in the same parts of the brain. And so, you know, sometimes even feeling into how much you're, while I know you're not consciously enjoying your fight or flight, you are probably subconsciously enjoying it a lot. And that tapping, you know, using a little bit of a reverse psychology approach can be really helpful. Like, isn't it awesome that I'm always in this fight and flight response? That is, you know, or that you can create these statements that have, or like, isn't it terrible that this amazing amount of calm is inevitably coming to show up in my life, and that I'm going, and it's completely awful that I'm going to have to let go of my anxious inner being. You know, being calm sounds terrible. You know, and so you can use some of these scripts and thought processes, and they really disrupt the nervous system in terms of those chronic patterns. And that's always, and they're always kind of, and they, you know, and they just make us laugh at ourselves too, which I think is a huge dose of medicine too.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point out, so you look like you're turning your head much more nicely side to side when you went. And
yeah, you do, Rachel. And I am as well, because I did the exercise. And it does feel better.
No, I really am, actually. I really am. Yeah,
it does feel better.
Yeah, that connection. Sorry, just to reflect on it, that connection around that fight or flight and that subconsciously, it makes a lot of, I mean, it's probably a massive overshare this, but I think when my mum died, she was ill for a very long time. So it was about 3.5 years of cancer. So it was living in a period of uncertainty for all that time of, like, you know, was it life? Could she be saved? Could she not? And so it feels very, it's something that I'm very used to feeling historically. And maybe the COVID scenario was reminded me of that. And therefore I feel close to her, because that's 25 years ago. So fascinating.
Well, it is. And it really makes a lot of sense. In Chinese medicine, our lungs hold grief. And I think we all need to realize how incredibly sensitive we are to the collective consciousness. So when we have this respiratory disease going around that's leading to loss of life and loss of function for people that do, you know, even long-term for some that have survived, that there's, you know, that grief is literally in the air, and that it's going to bring up our old relationships with grief and moments that we experienced grief in the past as well. And to really take that as an opportunity to find, you know, to connect within yourself and to see that you're not ever truly separate from anything external. And when you miss something externally, even your mom, and I completely understand how, you know, those are very powerful. Like, we're so deeply wired to love our parents, and that there's, when we miss somebody else very much, it's, we're often really missing a piece of ourselves, you know, and so really tapping into what that, you know, what your mom was showing you about yourself that was really beautiful to, you know, and that's the great thing about doing, I think, these, like, some of this breathing around the heart, is it opens up the space for you to fall in love with yourself. And that's really something that we could all use a much healthier dose of.
Gosh, it's like therapy, this session. I apologize to our listeners. This is like me getting a therapy session. I'm getting a bit teary. I think that does, we don't often take time to reflect on, I think, the weight of things we carry. And I will just mention one thing before John comes in with a question. I think the thing about anxiety, and I'm not, I know some people, a lot of people have issues, you know, with anxiety and need to be on medication for various reasons. And you know, I'm not trying to say that doesn't exist, but I think a lot of us fall into that trap of having feelings of anxiety we associate with doing things and being busy, and it gives us a sense of purpose. and we're not very good with sitting about what we would be if we didn't have these feelings of anxiety, because I associate feeling anxious. I do feel very anxious a lot of the time with wanting a better future. And there's some kind of mix up in how that sits within me. So I think this exercise is quite useful for that as well, that breathing at the back of the heart and kind of trying to tell yourself that everything will be okay. So yeah, I think that's quite good.
And think, and so as you open up your, like, it's opening up just some, like, you know, so I'll say, just to kind of recap homework for you, you know, I would say, you know, like, really be mindful of where you're hemorrhaging out giving without getting something bad, like, and how you can receive, but not just receive in terms of very practical thing, you know, or things like money or, like, you know, but even like if a small child hands you a handful of grass, take it. You know, that it's like practice receiving in the simplest of ways, but receiving from that space of your inner being.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's nice. I've got a little boy who gives me a lot of daisies. So yeah, that'd be nice to just, and I find it a nuisance. I can just enjoy that.
John, did you have a question? And handfuls of daisies now.
Handfuls of daisies.
Yeah. This is amazing stuff. It really is. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Melanie, is, people talk a lot about gut feeling. You know, my gut feeling was I should go and do this. And we've talked about lots of different parts of the body. What's the story there in the vagus nerve, and what sort of things are, like, problems in the gut? What are they manifesting themselves as in?
Yeah, I'll say, well, your vagus nerve innervates so many different aspects of your gut. It can show up in a couple. I'll give it two kind of extreme ways that it shows up. It can certainly show up in terms of irritable bowel, and, you know, in the way that, like, a lot of functional and integrative medicine doctors will treat leaky gut syndrome for a variety of dysfunctions, you know, that having your gut, 70% of your immune system is in your gut. So having good gut health is incredibly important, but your gut is also your sense of self. It's your solar plexus in astrology. It's Virgo. It's your inner goddess energy. And then it's all of those self-confidence, self-worth, self, you know, all those self-hyphen emotions are in your gut. And so what'll happen is that people either have guts that are screaming at them, or they have guts that are deaf and are very shut down. And, you know, and sometimes that the shutdown piece comes with constipation and whatnot, but not always. But the thing that they really both have in common is this real disembodiment of the self, you know, that really show, you know, that you, those people I find often need, like, they need more ego and they need more deeper purpose and deeper identity and those kinds of things, really, like, and more power, like, and that really shows up, can radically transform gut health. And so I don't want to minimize the physical stuff. And certainly, and I collaborate with registered dietitians and you know, functional and integrative medicine dietitians as well. And so to, like you need good building blocks and good nutrients to make things happen. However, your posture changes your hormones. We know that through research. And I suspect that it even changes your digestive enzyme secretion or the way you digest things as well. That if you are, and I'll tell my own story from this, but I've helped other people do the same. I was very well aware of functional medicine right after I graduated from PT school, like, you know, 25 years ago. So, like, I've lived in this world long before it was mainstream. And I had, I used to have a lot of difficulty with food sensitivities. And my reaction was always that my ears would get plugged up, which is super interesting because your ears, the skin on the inside of the ears is innervated by the vagus nerve. Like, I was very aware that there's, like, all along that there's been this vagal component that I've been trying to figure out with my ears. And one day, it was probably about 11 or 12 years ago. Like, I thought, like, and I had been gluten-free and dairy-free and done all of this stuff for years before it was as trendy as it is now. And I will say, and it helped. It was definitely, but I had gotten to a point where I really thought I had been super great about what I was eating, and I was still getting the ear pain reaction. And I just lost my mind with it one day. And I told my food, I was like, we are not having this relationship. You work for me. Mm-hmm. And you get to nourish me, and whatever I don't need gets to be eliminated. And like, we are just not playing this game anymore. And it did, almost all of my food sensitivities went away in very short order after I lost my mind with my body about that. And what I realized in hindsight was how some of the knowledge that I had acquired had really left me in a victim mentality in relationship to the food industry. You know, that I could make anything bad for you, and that you had to have this perfect diet in order to, you know, for your body to be happy. And there was no bandwidth for any, you know, I had no shock absorption, I would say, in there. And I also wasn't showing up fully as myself. This all happened in, I will say that happened on the edges of my own midlife crisis, where my whole life started to fall apart and where this whole body of work was born. And so, you know, as I stepped into my own power, it was really fascinating for me to see that, like, I wasn't, you know, my body wasn't reacting to food the way that it had historically, and that that was really about me standing in my own power versus managing my food intake. And, you know, so there's some kind of, and I don't think it's not necessarily like an either or situation for most people. You know, I mean, I think that there's space for both of that, but your gut, like, I was not owning my intuition. Like, I thought my intuition and my logic were the same thing. I really just thought I was being logical when I was being a little more intuitive. And that's part of why I really like this whole system that I've pulled through too, because it does give some logic to intuition, that it's not always like you're pulling it out of thin air. This is just the structure of the cosmos. And the but it is very much those you know, but I think you have to give that, I will say, my gut in being deaf was me keeping my power away from myself, you know, versus really embodying it. You know, I find for people that have more active gut situations, it's that you can have this real conversation about what's, like, it's learning to have a conversation with your symptoms and how your gut says yes and how your gut says no, and having a language for that. Because by the time you have a whole bunch of digestive upset or chronic ongoing inflammatory issues, your body's been screaming no and you haven't been listening. Yeah. And so I think that, like, a lot of what I do is just help people fundamentally develop that yes, no piece, and know that they can be part of the relationship in setting the rules. You're not the victim of your body either. You know, I mean, I get our bodies are all different and have different preferences and whatnot, but that you can really, you know, as you, that your vagus nerve in terms of your gut brain is almost, it's like a muscle that you need to exercise. It's like, you've got to exercise the nerve. And as you do, amazing things open up. And we so deny the more intuitive piece of our beings. And I still hide, you know, I have intuitive skills that I don't particularly like to advertise, but it's like, but they come in handy every now and then. And I think that really honoring that's an inherent piece of who we are and how we pull in information. I know that was a long answer. Did that answer your question, John?
Yes, it did. It is that sort of it's just the fact that people use that phrase quite a lot, and I thought today was a really good opportunity to just explore that
I think there is
a connection.
Yeah, your gut feelings are absolutely your vagus nerve. I think your heart, like those tugs on your heart, are your vagus nerve.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and then, but it's really that relationship with, like, with the bigger picture. Like, in all humans, the right side of the diaphragm has more muscle mass than the left, so theoretically the right side will always win. And so I see a lot of people that are stuck kind of in this, like, right, what I call right diaphragm dominant. So, you know, their right shoulders are a little bit low and they're a little more compressed on that right side. But the earth below us and the solar system above us are all spinning the opposite direction. So when we're out of alignment on that bigger cosmic scale, so like we don't pull in accurate information and we can't get to the right place at the right time as often. And when our, you know, in terms of the vagus nerve being compressed through, like in that your heart literally sits right on top of your diaphragm, just like a sunrise or a sunset. If you, you know, your diaphragm is very much like a horizon. And in that region, it's where our, when our operating point and our practices are at odds with each other, it impairs our nutrition. So when we're being too much in our heads and not enough in our hearts and not enough in our intuition, that can literally impair your nutrition, you know, and in terms of how you're absorbing it, that like, if you, you know, like I would say now based on the later, you know, newer research that I power posed over my food, you know, and that changed the way I changed my posture in relationship to my food. I said, you're working for me. I'm not your victim. And then I started digesting it differently. And we have that power in terms of how we digest all sorts of things energetically and physically in our lives.
So just before we bring this conversation to a close, the vagus nerve and kind of leadership, what would be your takeouts from that? So somebody that's in a leadership role where they're perhaps prone to stress, they've got a lot of responsibility for other people, they've got conflicting demands. What would be your tips for, and just watch outs for somebody that this is new to and that they're in a leadership position?
Well, I would say one, make sure your vagus nerve has space to move. Just as we all need space, you've got your office space, you've got, you know, the space of your job, that your vagus nerve needs physical space to move. And if you go to embodyyourstar.com, you'll actually get two vagus nerve courses. It'll email you one and take you to a consolidated version of the course.
Oh, again, just say it again.
Oh, if you go to embodyyourstar.com, you will get taken to one short vagus nerve course, and you'll get emailed a longer one, so that you can really go through this yourself and assess and know what to do. I think that fundamentally you've got to keep your internal flow going and not to let those horizontal structures in your body tighten down, because that's going to start driving a stress response. And even if it's as simple a couple times a day or before you go into a meeting, that you take those few breaths to breathe into the backside of your heart. I think some of these exercises are really beautiful rituals to start meetings with, mm-hmm. to get the group in a coherent, heart cells synchronize with each other. That's just what they do. And so when we have a group of people together, the heart cells are all working to synchronize with each other. And when you set the container well, and you can do that very simply, you know, whether you're going to open it with a meditation or just, you know, have everybody take a couple of deep breaths, it could completely transform the energy of a meeting and allow it to be more productive and give people the space to operate from a more authentic point and create more flow within the meeting, you know, which will then extend out to more flow within the organization as well. And just know that your business and your body have a relationship and that they're going to mirror each other, and that you can, and everybody's got, I encourage people to get to know their own language of their bodies. That, like, I can teach them different ways that people's bodies say yes and no, but really you want to know be fluent in the language of your body, and that doesn't have to look like my language. You know, I don't get, like, you know, you get right arm pain when you're a little stressed. My immune system collapses. Like, I'll get throat, like, it'll show up, like, I'll start to get a sore throat. And that's when I know that I'm really getting in way too deep. And so, you know, people, like, we're all a little bit different in that way. And your vagus nerve is really the portal to effective leadership and executive influence, your vagus nerve is the biggest influencer of your body. And when you're looking to amplify your influence, you are going, the better your vagus nerve functions, the more you are the thermostat in the room and not the thermometer.
Oh, that's a nice analogy.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah. And really just leaning into that idea that your future has your back. It isn't something that you have to run out and chase, you know, that you're really supported and to really, you know, just breathe into the, you know, into the backside of your body and really enjoy that. And that can, I know it sounds really simple and even trite, but it can really open up a lot of really magical things in people's lives. I've seen it do a lot of amazing things and bring new opportunities and new insights. And, you know, there's a lot of good anatomical and physiological reasons to do it, but I think the energetic reasons are really where the payoff is. I think seeing people for their archetypal selves is really, really helpful. Like, we all know who the jester is in our lives and, you know, who's the sage and who's the hero and who's, you know, that we, who's the teacher, who's the messenger, that we have these kind of archetypal roles. And that archetypal perspective, I think, can really help you as a leader to get people in their sweet spot and operating from that point within yourself. You know, I would ask every leader that exercise I did with you, you know, what is your inner being? What is your soul dressed like? And really starting to move from that changes the way that people respond to you and around you, and it can really help build teams and build trust. And your vagus nerve is really integral to oxytocin production, which is happens in the heart. And oxytocin is a hormone that's most researched around trust. And we in businesses that have high levels of trust make more money.
Yeah.
And so, but at the end of the day, there's for all the research there is about trusting each other, there's not as much about trusting ourselves. And that's really where the magic is, that, you know, as you have, as your vagus nerve has more space and you have this internal flow and you're connected with this bigger picture, you start to trust yourself and you trust your gut instincts, you trust your heart. And as you give to the world gives back to you. And it really opens up this whole flow of reciprocity. And clear vision is so important to good leadership. I want to just end kind of on the vagus nerve exercise for decompressing it at the base of the skull. And so to do that, what you're going to do is grab the tragus of your ears. You'll need both hands for this. And so your tragus is the tab at the front of your ears that if you didn't want to hear me, you would push down over your ear hole. But you're going to grab the tragus between your thumb and your forefinger on each side, and you're going to pull the right one to the right and the left one to the left. And you're not going to be able to generate a lot of force here, nor should you. You know, you're pulling with maybe a pound or half a kilogram of force, just a little bit of pull to the outside. And you can do that same heart breathing exercise while you do this, that you inhale into the backside of your heart, hold your breath for a little bit, and then exhale. But your vagus nerve exits between your temporal bones and your occipital bone, which is at the back of your head. And so grabbing onto your ear this way is the easiest way to grab onto your temporal bone. And it's just nice to give that whole area a little bit more space. I like to do this before I go to bed at night. Often it's a nice settling technique. And there's some more advanced variations of this in the free courses that I have to offer as well, but that's a really nice way to,
you know. Oh, I've got that dizzy, you know, that lovely thing. You get those circles in front of your eyes.
Oh, good, good. Oh, yeah. That if you're, well, give yourself, make sure you're, yeah.
Water before I stand up. What a lovely way to end the podcast. Thank you so much, Melanie. Honestly,
just
to reiterate what John said, I could listen to you all day. This is probably posed more questions for me than it's answered. And when you mentioned astrology, I know there'll be a lot of rational people that kind of go, oh no, on the podcast. But for me, I am somebody that loves astrology. So maybe we'll invite you back next year.
Thank you. Well, and I'll say one last comment about that I think you can, you know, you can look at the astrology through archetypal stories. And I think that, you know, this is really my much more grounded approach to it, that these stories are telling the story of our anatomy and our physiology, that that's really what, the, you know, that they are really scientific stories. It's just written in a different way. But this works through, like the biblical story of the Temple of the Ark of the Covenant describes our cranial anatomy in a lot of detail. And the Hindu deity Ganesh is our cerebellum and brainstem, and that there are many stories from many cultures. And the only rule we ever follow is as above, so below.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really like that. So where
will people find you, Melanie, if they want to follow up? So you can be found obviously on LinkedIn, and we'll click put the link in there for you on the show notes. But
the easiest place to find everything is at embodyyourstar.com, and that has all of the opt-ins, and my social media is all Embody Your Star, but that's all summarized there. I'm just as we're recording this, I'm getting ready to launch a membership program where I'm teaching every month with vagus nerve decompression classes and more. There's lots of offerings, and so you can find more information on that in that location as well.
Wonderful. We will put all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you so much for doing that exercise with me. I got a lot out of that, and I hope our listeners did too.
Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you so much. I very much appreciate the little girl in me that wasn't allowed to use her voice in some situations always gets a lot of healing out of all the beautiful podcast hosts that allow me to share my story. And so I really appreciate what you guys are doing for me as well.
Thank you so much for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you've got a lot out of this. If you'd like to read up a bit more on any of the content that you've heard in today's podcast, be sure to check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com.